because you looked more like him. A number of things like the Red Sox media guide, I noticed how both you and your grandfather played for the Red Sox.
Yes, yeah, he was a little better than I was.
Yeah, I guess.
But I was received very well because of that. A lot of people remembered him or you know, respected that background.
Yeah, but I had one question for you. I'd just like to ask you a few questions about your career and stuff, too. But the first question that kind of came to my mind was, what about your dad? He was kind of in between there.
Well, he went to Providence College
and
played baseball and basketball there. And then he actually was probably going to play baseball, but I think broke his thumb sliding or some such.
Ooh.
I think he played in the Cape Cod League.
Yeah.
So he got hurt, and it became a problem. So he ended up, he ended up being a 90-day wonder going into the service of the Navy during the Second World War.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So he was headed in that direction, but just
yeah, yeah, very good basketball. In fact, I think he made the Hall of Fame at Providence College. If I'm correct, in maybe basketball.
Now, what position did you play for the most part?
Well, I'm left-handed, so I played whatever they let a left-hander play.
Yeah.
Mostly, I played center field and first base.
I see, yeah. How about you? Do you have any idea what your dad was hoping to play there when he was...
Well, actually, he modeled me after Ted Williams. I mean, he really had that in his mind, and he thought I would make a terrific first baseman, but I had good speed. So then he was a good mentor, you know. He really brought me along psychologically and physically. And knew what he was talking about, so he was certainly my my director.
Right. Yeah. Would he have played infield or outfield, do you think?
He was a third baseman, actually.
He was. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And your grandfather was.
My grandfather was a first baseman, outfielder, and he played on the Black Sox scandal team. He played.
Oh, you know, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, he was the leadoff hitter for the 1919 White Sox team.
But not one of the eight.
No.
Yeah, yeah, there I see that. Yeah, through 1920, he played through the 20
season. Yeah, he actually played quite a few years.
Yeah, and then he had the last five with Boston.
Right.
Even though he was from Charlestown originally, he started with Chicago.
My mom always remembered him always providing, even during the Depression and everything. He ended up painting houses after he retired. It was not quite as glamorous a thing. He couldn't set money aside too well.
Yeah, interesting. That's what Jimmy Fox ended up doing.
Yeah, real painting houses.
Yeah.
And whatever he did, he did a real good job at it, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you remember your grandfather at all?
Vaguely. I was probably seven when he died.
That's what it looks like, yeah.
Yeah, and we moved out here, out to the West Coast at about that time, 54. So I remember him, and I remember sitting on his knee at the house, and but I didn't talk baseball because it's six or seven. I really didn't have that picture.
Well, you probably absorbed some of it, right?
I kind of wish I could go back. There are a few things in your life you'd like to go back and ask some questions.
Absolutely.
You have that shot at, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Well, he was he played many years, 16 years, I guess, altogether.
Yeah, and he was not much of a, you know, he didn't have a shrine to himself anywhere. He didn't really talk much about it. He just was a pretty humble guy.
Yeah, yeah. He played all three positions. Both, mostly right field, it looks like. But
mostly right field and a little first base, played the outfield.
Yeah.
Kind of a utility guy, it sounded like, although he hung on a long time. I tried the utility way. It didn't work.
Well, when you came up with the Red Sox, were you in the Red Sox system? Were you signed by the Red Sox?
No, actually, I'd been picked up by the Red Sox. I went to Stanford and signed after my junior year with the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Played single-A, double-A, triple-A. Played for Lasorda in triple-A before he was a major league manager.
Ah, yeah.
And then the Red Sox drafted me in the winter draft that year.
I see, yeah. And then how did you develop to the...
Well, I came in, and Yastrzemski was obviously the big guy, and Harper. I came along about the same time as Dwight Evans. So I played center field. I had a poor spring training. They had Rick McMiller and Ben Ogilvie at the time.
Yeah.
And so I was sort of the sixth outfielder as it worked out. And I had no problem with that because I played poorly. And I went to AAA Louisville, played for Darryl Johnson with Cecil Cooper at first, and I played center, and Dwight Evans played right. And we had a pretty doggone good team. And I watched sort of Evans. He was like 18 years old. He was sort of a very raw young guy, and watched him really mature. And we had a good year. We won the pennant that year, and I got called up briefly with the Red Sox when Yastrzemski got hurt. I played, I think I was there for 5 weeks.
That was in 72.
72.
You got in seven games. You came up in, well, actually fairly early.
On the field, except as a pinch hitter. I pinch ran once or something.
May 17th was your first day.
Yeah, we were on like a three-week road trip.
Yeah, you got just in seven games, five at-bats. You didn't happen to get a hit that year.
Once a week for 5 weeks.
Right.
Never got a chance to have any sort of rhythm or anything.
Right.
And I guess I was labeled as not necessary because I didn't deliver.
But it was basically for defensive and backup purposes.
I have no idea. I was hitting 430 in AAA when they brought me up.
Really? Wow.
And that just threw me completely off. Although
yeah.
I was thrilled to be there.
Oh, sure.
It just took me right out of this pennant race and this hot streak. And I just sat and watched, and it was an odd experience. But we were like two games out, and so people couldn't care less about me. You know, it was all about how I could help the team.
Well, they so often say to prospects that they don't really want to bring up or that they want to send down, you know, you need playing time. And I guess you're saying, yeah, I probably did.
Yeah, well, what happens now, I mean, I watched this guy Dusty Baker out here.
Yes.
He takes his extra guys, and they play once or twice a week.
Well, Jimmy Williams was doing that in Boston here for his tenure with the team. He got everybody.
I love that idea. We used to play eight guys until they dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And guys were exhausted, but they were in the lineup every night.
Well, that was the old way. I mean,
yeah.
Talking to Johnny Pesky and so forth, he said if you came out of the lineup for a day, you never knew if you'd get your job back.
Yeah.
That was the mentality they had.
A lot of fear, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, the Lou Gehrig thing, I guess.
Yeah.
What was the guy? I can't even think of the guy's name. That's Wally Pipp.
Yes. One day out, you're gone.
Got back in.
Right.
Yeah, so there's always that. I think there's a lot of fear in athletes. You know, a lot of fear of failure, fear of losing your job, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, you went on and had a good year in Houston the next year.
Well, I got a chance to play. I had a 12-game hitting streak and felt like I, you know, had finally established myself. And then I thought I would start the next year when they traded Jimmy Winn, but Greg Gross came along.
Yeah.
And they put him in, and he went 4-for-5, 3-for-4 in his first two games, and I never smelled the lineup after that.
Yeah.
I started like five games that year, too.
Mm. Well, you got in a lot of games. Not so many at-bats.
But it was again, totally out of rhythm. So actually, I asked to be traded, and Preston Gomez said that I could hang around as an extra guy, and I could play first. Maybe I should have done that, but it just felt like I needed to, you know, I needed to play to be the best that I could be. I wasn't very good, and I didn't do not a lot of training, not a lot of working on guys that weren't playing. You were just had to figure it out yourself, basically.
Now, your dad was Shano Collins, was it his daughter that married your dad?
Yes.
Yeah, because I have different last names.
Right.
Just figured, but you ended up with the Collins for a middle name.
Yes, I'm named after I'm watching this now, this videotape on the war.
Yeah.
I'm named after my mom's brother, Robert Collins, who was killed on Iwo Jima.
Oh, I see, yeah. The whole time you were getting, I mean, you talked about your dad, he's kind of your mentor there.
Yeah.
As you got into the upper minor leagues and into the majors, were you still in close touch with your father and so forth?
Oh, yeah. He was... very much interested. He wasn't one of those guys that would shove you in, but he just was very interested. He probably saw more in me, kind of had a picture of what I could do and what I could do and all that, and kept giving me visuals of it. And he was very, very supportive, not a rant or raver kind of guy.
Right.
Good motivator.
Have you had any kids that played sports at all?
Yes, actually, my son went to Stanford as a water polo goalie and played in the NCAA championships for Stanford that way.
Hmm.
So I don't know how he got into water. Well, we live in Santa Cruz. He's right by the water and was
right.
A lifeguard here. So he became a swimmer and a water polo player.
What's his name?
His name is Zachary.
Zachary, okay.
Yeah, he's down in Argentina now.
Wow.
Yeah, he's working on the internet stuff in Argentina.
Yeah.
Speaking Spanish more than I can.
That would be nice to be able to do.
Yeah, He's very adept. He's
yeah.
A pretty versatile guy.
But he never showed any particular interest in baseball?
Yeah, actually he did, but there comes a point where you can see he was very good, a real bright guy, good player, but he wasn't fast enough, wasn't strong enough. It wasn't going to be his sport, not professionally.
Right.
So he just went with what he enjoyed, and that he he still, his best friends are still those water polo players at Stanford.
Yeah.
It was a good move on his part.
Well, after you finished with the Mets then in 75, were you out of baseball then, or were you in?
Well, I requested a trade. I said, you don't even know who I am. I played for Yogi Berra. He didn't even know who I was.
Yeah, well, that was him and Casey Stengel both had that reputation.
Oh, I mean, the guy was a nice guy, but he was pathetic in the dugout. He was really, a really nice guy.
Yeah.
And a great player.
Yeah,
but,
oh, sure.
You know, in terms of strategy or whatever, he was a joke.
Mm.
So I just said, well, you know, it was all cronyism. Mets, you know, there was the Crane Pool gang and these guys, little cliques, kind of like the Red Sox when I got there with Yastrzemski, very clicky.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just said, look, I don't like the East Coast, I don't like New York, I like Boston, but I didn't like New York. And I asked if they trade me back to the West Coast for some, they were going to send me to AAA, so I just said, trade me. So I got traded for a guy named Brown, third baseman, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Phoenix, played with Jack Clark and Johnny LeMaster and Bob Knepper and those guys.
For another year or two or something?
Yeah, for a year, 1976, yep. And then my kids were starting school, and I, there was no free agency. I was making $25,000 a year.
Yeah.
It just didn't make sense.
What'd you end up doing then?
Try something else.
What was your next career?
Well, actually, my wife and I moved to Santa Cruz, and we were involved with child care for a while, and I got into teaching. I've been teaching for 19 years.
What do you teach?
I teach at Santa Cruz High. I teach social studies, American government, world history.
Yeah, I used to teach political science at the University of Lowell up here for a while.
Wow. Yeah, I've been dealing with a lot of political science.
Yeah. No, I did that.
Although I'm not much of a scientist, so rather than social science, I'm much more a social studies.
What about The Science of Hitting by Ted Williams? Do you ever read that?
I think I've got three editions of that.
Yeah.
Great book.
It is. Now, you mentioned earlier when you kind of got an extra welcome in the Boston area as Shano's grandson.
Yes.
What do you remember about that?
Well, I just remember being asked a lot of those questions and being, the stories that were written about me were written in regard to him and my relationship to him.
Right.
So yeah. It was nice. I mean, I got more attention than I deserved. I certainly made a little contribution, but it was, there's such lore in Boston. It's such historic stuff that I think gets the natural. I'm trying to think of the guy that worked for the Boston Globe who was such a jerk. Oh, what was this guy? Cliff Keene.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Oh, my God, he was awful.
Well, there's almost 15 years, not quite, but between your two careers. So you probably had a few people that came out and said, I remember him, or something. But not too many, I suppose.
Well, I don't think too many. I didn't have any too many fans come up, but we were out of town most of the time. I really didn't get a chance to mix with the community much. I think we were there for 2 weeks. I stayed with Bill Lee.
Oh, geez.
My wife and I, we lived with Bill because I played with him in Alaska.
Yeah.
And great guy. And Carlton Fisk was a really great guy, and we played together in AAA. And we didn't play in AAA, but we were at spring training together.
Right, yeah. Yep.
Actually, I think he did start off with us and then got called up. Yeah, I think that might be. That was the beginning of a hell of a career.
Yeah.
Good guy. Real neat guy.
Yep, well, he certainly went on.
Yeah, he went on. He was just a really strong individual. Really,
right.
Real neat guy. He was very impressed. Sparky Lyle was there that year, and he got traded in spring training for Danny Cater.
Yeah, that was one of the...
That was a startling trade.
One of the great moves. Well, I heard it was because he used to sit on birthday cakes.
Well, he had quite a reputation. He was a pretty wild guy. Stories about him living with the hoodlum priest or whatever in New York. He was a really kind of a crazy guy. In fact, that's probably why he ended up with such a short career.
I don't remember hearing that. That was after he moved to the Yankees?
I think when he went to New York, he lived with the... I just remember this story that he moved in with some sort of aberrant priest, former priest or something. They call him the Hoodlum Priest.
Hmm. He wrote a very funny book. I don't know.
Oh, he was a sharp guy.
It's called The Year I Owned the Yankees.
Oh, yeah.
It was actually a guy named David Fisher that probably did most of the writing, but it's a really hilarious book.
Yeah.
And I've never...
He had a good sense of humor. He was a real, real strong personality, real interesting. I didn't know these guys that well. You know?
Right, yeah.
They were nice enough to take me in. Although Yastrzemski really did not. He was really pretty rough.
Well, he was always kind of standoffish.
Yeah,
he
just took a, for some reason, he probably wouldn't even remember, but he just seemed to take a disliking to me. I asked him once, and he went, "What do you mean?"
You probably weren't the only guy.
I don't know. Probably not. But I confronted him with it. I just wanted to know, what the hell? Did I piss you off somehow?
Yeah.
He goes, "I don't know what you mean."
Yeah.
He didn't want to deal with it.
Just denied it, yeah.
Yeah. But, what am I going to do? I'm some kind of a little rookie in these Hall of Fame material.
Right.
You can treat me any way you want.
But it sounds like, throughout it all, though, it sounds like you really enjoyed the experience looking back
goodness.
On it.
Oh, goodness. No, anybody, how many people wouldn't trade places with me in a second? It was great.
Remember what number you wore for Boston?
I think I was 47.
Yeah. I can look it up, I guess.
That'd be my guess.
Yeah.
I had kind of an odd number, I think, because they weren't, find out after a while, you get numbers like that at spring training, you don't have great plans for you.
Yeah, well, they...
9 or 105.
If they give you a single-digit number, you'd be in better shape. But.
Yeah, you're much better shape if you have a typical number from your position or something.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, 47 was up. Of course, there were some good 47s, I guess. Hank Aaron was 44, so I felt pretty good.
Well, the Red Sox have had a couple of good 47s, too, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Warren Spahn might have been 47, but that might have been with Milwaukee.
That would have been with the Braves.
Yeah.
No.
Did you ever, remember meeting any old-time players when, even in that stretch you were there? I'm thinking more of the Boston years rather than,
Harry Hooper used to live out here. Before he died, he lived over here in Capitola right near us, and I met him when I was in high school.
Really? Yeah.
And then his son, who was in real estate, helped get him in the Hall of Fame, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Really battled with the PR.
And well, he was a tremendous. I keep reading things about him.
Harry Hooper.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, kind of an unsung.
He even made a pitching appearance once and did quite well.
Huh. Well, good athletes can pull that off.
Yeah,
I think baseball at that time was more about being a good athlete.
They seem to be coming back to that in terms of the way they choose people now. It's just general athletic abilities, but.
Yeah. Well, I think that's healthy. But I think you're getting fewer choices now.
But there's a bigger pool to draw from because you've got the whole Latin American.
What's happening is you have to. Yeah, it has to be. It's becoming more international.
Yeah, a lot of Koreans now.
Yeah, Koreans.
Some Japanese.
We got a kid on this team from, I think, El Salvador, Nicaragua.
Mm-hmm. I was down in Nicaragua once, and certainly had good coverage of Major League Baseball.
Oh, they're serious baseball people.
Which is great.
Nicaragua, not so much Costa Rica. Guatemala, pretty good, but all the Caribbean places, Cuba.
Yeah, I spent a week in Cuba earlier this year.
Venezuela always has.
Yeah, well, the Red Sox have, I think, 2 of the 25 were from Venezuela this year.
Yeah, very good Winter League program.
Yeah.
I played with Louis Tiant with the Red Sox. What a great guy he was.
He just started his own cigar company.
Oh, he always had a cigar in his mouth. What a character. And Louis Aparicio, really nice guy. He was there then.
He basically lent his name to El Tiante Cigars.
Oh, perfect.
I got one of them.
That was his whole thing. He was like 40 years old. And probably said he was 20, but he was about 40. He was just getting by on guile completely. But he had me.
Yeah.
I hated pitchers like that. I'd rather see the speedballers than the guys that knew how to pitch.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, all I need to do is time it then, I guess.
Yeah, just be a fastball hitter, and I could hit anybody's fastball. Just let me see it a couple times.
Did you ever meet Ted Williams in spring training or anything?
I never met Ted Williams. Met Willie Mays when I was playing, but I...
Yep. So he wasn't... Actually, he would have just been finishing up with the Texas Rangers at the time you were with the Red Sox.
Yeah, he was the manager of the Texas Rangers.
Yeah, 69th in Washington through 71 or 72, yeah.
He wasn't around the ballpark. Again, I think Johnny Pesky might have been a broadcaster.
He was from 69 through 74.
Yeah.
So yeah.
He was there, and I remember his name, but not much in terms of the old guard.
Yeah. Well, listen, thank you for taking the time. I was really kind of curious about the generational thing, you know,
sure.
to know whether your dad had... I figured he must have shown some interest, because, you know, how would you have gotten interested?
Yeah, he broke something, whether it was thumb or ankle or something, and he was a good athlete. I think he probably would have definitely been a professional player. I don't know whether he'd made it to major leagues, who knows. There weren't as many teams, I think, and the war broke out, so that made it difficult.
Right.
But I had 6 years of trying to deal with the Army Reserve, because I was dealing with it during the Vietnam War. And it was
That's right. Yeah.
Flying everywhere. I was always trying to get to a reserve unit to make a meeting.
Well, there's another distraction for you.
It was a waste of time.
Yeah.
What we did at those meetings was just a waste. Like any meeting, it seems like.
Readiness.
Yeah, readiness. We were a reception station, so they would shave their heads and take away their Playboys and frisk them. That was what my job was going to be.
Yeah. Well, I'm also, besides the work that I'm doing on this book, I'm a researcher for, a volunteer for the Society for American Baseball Research, SABRE.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard of them. It's about 7,000-member organization of people that do baseball research. And what I'd like to do is take the, with your consent, you know, make the information that you gave me here available to them, so any other researchers that, you know, might happen to want to know more about you could look it up and
that's not a problem.
So forth. What we usually do is try to make a copy of the notes or tapes or whatever and send them to the Hall of Fame too, just for their archives over there.
Well,
so if that's okay,
that's okay with
you, I don't.
I have no problem at all with that.
Right. Well, I appreciate it. I enjoyed talking to you. And
well, Bill, take care.
You
thank very much.
Did I ask you though? Now I'm trying to remember what you ended up doing as a career afterwards. I think I asked.
I've been teaching for 19 years.
That's right, teaching. Yeah, you're still doing that now. Yeah,
been real good.
Very good.
Okay.
Thanks, Bob.
Sure.
Appreciate it. Bye.
the wagon. They have the wagon. They're on call.
Yeah.
Because the police station is so close by the headquarters. So.
Right. You have more problems at night games than day games, specifically?
Yes. Except for the day games that are usually on a holiday or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
When people have gotten a chance to, you know, drink a little bit before they come in, and, you know, especially like, what's their Patriots Day? Sometimes it becomes a problem.
Jeez, it's early in the morning.
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes, like, because people don't know they're not working on that Monday.
Right.
You know, they'll just start early or something like that. But yeah, night games usually are a little worse just because the cover of night alone,
mm-hmm.
you know, calls for less families to come in and things like that.
Right. What about any nice stories, sort of where maybe you've been able to help somebody out or gotten some good free feedback?
Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why I go back. It's almost on a daily basis. Where I work, I also help the handicap to their seats.
Yes.
And, I mean, groups come back and they remember you. I mean, I help people out all the way to their car, usually, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If they, you know, we provide wheelchairs within the stadium, so I'll just drop them off. And, they'll, you know, they'll be more than obliged to try to hand you a tip or things like that, you know. But, I mean, there's a lot of positive feedback all the time. And it's just like they say with the friendly sunway, they can see that it's working. And, you know, you're encouraged to smile and be courteous and just, you know, add that little touch of customer service that I think sometimes is lost.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, because I've been to myself, 13 Major League Baseball stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, observe to see what other people do with your game and, you know, have a hot dog here and there. And it's like, you know, Fenway does have a different attitude with it because people come to see Fenway itself sometimes and not even the game. It's just a strange aura. Like, you see people walking by and they're like, oh my God, you know, I'm all the way from China or I'm all the way from Europe and I've heard about this place and I just, you know, wanted to see it, you know? And
right.
That's enough.
I noticed they carved out, essentially, you could say that, more room for handicapped people.
Okay.
Even over the 5 years or so you worked there,
mm-hmm.
it seems to have expanded that
yes.
area. And,
they pulled rows out just to
yeah.
just to accommodate, you know. And if they don't fill those seats up, they do sell the standing room, or we'll provide them with a chair.
Right.
They can sit down. And especially with how the stadium hasn't really grown in the population, as you probably know. People have gotten bigger
yeah.
over the years because of, you know, better diets and, you know, TV and internet and things like that.
Better diets is the right
okay.
Yeah.
You know, maybe just more, yeah, different diet. So sometimes the folks that are
right.
bigger than the seats will need an extra, you know, bigger seat, so we usually put them upstairs.
My favorite seat is that front row of section 28.
Oh, yes.
The big Y
yes.
seat. It's like just totally constructed by itself.
Yes.
But it's like, you know, when you sit there, I don't know if you've ever sat there. I guess you can't really join a game, but I've sat there sometimes, and it's just like, it's almost like you feel you're going to pitch forward and fall
oh, sure.
down the steps. It's like there's nothing in front of you.
Oh, sure.
And you feel really exposed
yeah.
in some ways. But
when I worked at KD, like, that's right in front of us, so we used to see it all the time.
Yeah. Any other sort of memorable, bad or good incidents or unusual things that happened that you come to mind?
I mean, I all the time when my friends ask me about, like, what was, like, you know, a cool thing about working at Fenway, it's just like, you get to see some of the legends, you know. When we were at the All-Star game, it was just like, I had a tap on my shoulder, and I turned around, and of course, right in front of me, I see this, you know, great mustache, and this Raleigh singer's asking me for directions, and I mean, he remembered me, and he came back, and he was just like, hey, thanks a lot for directions, you know, can you show me my way to this? And just, you know, I collect the cards, baseball cards, as I was a kid, and you see these guys for real, and it's
yeah.
like, these are real people, you know, and it kind of grounds you. And like, you see actors all the time, Billy Crystal, I've seen Alec Baldwin walk through the door, and it's just like, you know, you have normal rapport with them. That's the greatest thing, you know. It's well, name dropping here and there doesn't hurt either.
Right.
It's kind of cool that you met these people and you see who they are and things like that.
Have you ever worked any special functions over there?
Yep, they do the Bo Sox every once in a while. I did the,
You mean the kids' day?
The kids stand and they have the Bo Sox, the special club. The Bo Sox club, they come in. I've done the clinics for the children that come in.
Mm-hmm.
And I work, those were really cool because you have to work with the players also. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have to stand there and then sometimes you become a part of the clinics. They need you to hold something or show them a technique or just throw them a ball or something like that. Let me see, I also have worked, they have this special rec All-Star game there. I worked at the Beanpot.
A rec All-Star game?
Yeah.
What's that mean?
So they have recreational leagues all across
oh, okay,
the city,
yeah.
and then they have, you know, they pick the best of the best of all their rec leagues, and they come to play. Jay actually played in that game. He got the pitch for an inning, and that, which is awesome. That's like his dream. And I don't know if you got to test him a little bit, but
yeah, well, we didn't get into that.
Yeah, he is a diehard Red Sox fan,
yeah.
as you probably tell. And he's worked for Foxborough, so he's worked for a lot of the grounds crews on both, and he loves doing sports, which is
yeah.
great.
I had a chance to bat once at Fenway.
Oh, that's awesome.
In the fun thing.
Oh, that's great.
What's it called? Fantasy Day.
Yeah, I've done that 2 years. 2 years.
Yeah, I've done it for a couple years now, but I did it a few years ago.
Oh, that's a great day for people. Like, you see folks' faces, you know, they come up and they, you know, get up. If they just bunt it, it's fine. It's just a little wild. Anything, just anything to hit it, you know?
Yeah.
It's really
I didn't
cool.
do that great, but I slammed one into the seats over
oh, really?
Third base.
Nice.
I knocked a couple back off the screen.
Nice.
And then I hit one that could have been a single if the fielder was still out of business. Beforehand.
That's great.
One of the things that, I'm really right at the end here.
Okay.
Pretty much, but, I call it swarming. When,
mm-hmm.
you know, something starts to happen, you see a whole bunch of people all at once sort of cluster down.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something they teach you to do sort of on mass, like volume?
Yeah, because it's like if you need assistance or just because you don't know what the situation is going to be, especially a fight. You know, you don't know the complexity of the fight. It could be one person, two people, three people. It could be a whole group of people and one
right.
person you don't know. So the best thing to do is to come in yourself to show that you have presence.
Yeah.
And with the uniforms that we show, we're pretty distinctive overall. Like you could even tell from like probably like from behind home plate, you can look at the bleachers, you can see if there's like, you know, masses of white shirts or blue shirts, depending on what outfit we're wearing that day, going to one location. And that kind of gives you a good reassurance because it's like I see fans that come back and they totally know who we are. And they're just
right.
like, whoa, there's something going on out there. I see these guys moving. So that is a technique that's been employed.
I mean, I think it's really effective because,
yeah.
you know, if I'm sitting in section 17 and I see something happen to the bleachers, it still gives me a reminder
mm-hmm.
that the same thing could happen to me.
Definitely. I mean, there's a lot of psychology involved in today's security force, and I think they've employed it a lot in a certain way, just because presence is a very important thing. Like, you're less likely to do a crime if somebody sees you there.
Right.
Or sees you that you're watching, you're looking around, and the whole entire, you know, going to the front of the, you know, front of all the crowd and just turn around and just look up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If you're not looking at anything, people see that you're there, and there's somebody looking up there, you know, and if by me, they're trying to do something, you know, there's such a more chance that you're going to catch them.
Did you get any kind of
verbal abuse from people?
Every once in a while. I mean, it's a service job. It's a security job.
Yeah.
And a lot of people feel that this is our only job. So we get the old, you know, mall security jokes, like, why don't you get a real job?
Mm-hmm.
All these associate things. But we know it better. I mean, most of those kids there, as you even know, very well educated. This is like their fun job.
Yeah.
You know, they don't do it for the money. They do it because they love the game. They love the place that they work at.
Do you ever, in terms of if somebody gets arrested, do you ever have to make a court appearance?
We do not make court appearances. Only the supervisors.
Yeah.
They usually will vouch for us because in terms of that kind of area, we don't try to get to that situation.
Right.
So I'm not even, just my 5 years, I haven't heard of a member of our staff going to any court appearance.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, as I think I said at one point in the talk, it's like a city of 35,000 people.
Definitely. I agree.
That's just there for a few hours, and yet they don't have, in a sense, roots in the community. Like, it's not their house.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of behavior that you wouldn't do at home, mm-hmm, sometimes applies.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing that there's not more difficulty.
Yeah. I mean, I think with Fenway, a lot of people feel, even though they don't feel rooted in it, that it's such a special place.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I mean, I kind of symbolically call the baseball stadiums of America, especially Fenway, like churches, like almost like churches. And Fenway is almost like the Vatican City for most people. Like my girlfriend called it Graceland for her, because that's,
mm,
she's from the area in Western Massachusetts, actually.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the supreme place to go, you know? And I mean, it has a strange mystique to it. I mean, there's very, very things you can't put your finger on. I mean, we know it's old, we know it's crumbling, we know all these things about it, but still, people are so attracted to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that to me itself always attracted me, that it's old and crumbling.
Yeah.
It's just like I took the subway in to go over to the police center today to, mm-hmm, meet somebody. And yeah, I was just looking at the subway and I saw this little sign at North Station. It says, effective March 18th, 1977,
yep, yep,
this thing will happen. I said, that sign is still up there.
Yeah, definitely. You go to the Museum of Science, there's like a sign from 3 years ago up there that the registry has moved. And,
yeah,
you know, and that's why Boston, I think, in itself is a great city, because there's so much modernism, but there's so much the past. Like, where I work, Downtown Crossing, there's a cemetery.
Yep.
Right there in the middle of two huge buildings. I mean, where else can you get that? You know, you could drink a Sam Adams.
And
see,
there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty amazing. That's my true love of the city itself. And working at Fenway just adds to it. But everybody's eyes just literally light up when you say, oh, yeah, you know, I work at Fenway. You know, that's why I've been there so long, I guess. Like you
right.
said, like, a lot of people have been there way longer than I have, and the same thing pops up. You know, why do you work here? And it's like, I love this place.
Yeah.
You know? Where else can you work? And you meet all these people, and you get all these experiences. You're rubbing elbows with, like, you know, every single economic class you possibly can in
yep.
one place,
yep.
one thing, and that's to watch baseball. And that's just, you know, I wish the world was more like that, but...
Right. Now, after the game, you maybe go out on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Make sure people don't run out
yes.
on the field and try to grab things out of the dugout or
yeah.
whatever they might do.
Yeah, especially we try to, you know, because the way the dugouts are set up, you know, kids like to climb over and
yeah.
we don't want any kids to fall down or anything like that.
Actually, after the Red Sox won the pennant in 67,
mm-hmm.
the Impossible Dream,
oh, yeah. mm-hmm.
I got out on the mound.
Oh, my God.
Fast enough. To hit Jim Lonborg on the back.
Oh my God!
Give him a pat on the
yeah.
back. I mean, I was poised and ready.
Yeah.
You know, I knew the thing was coming. And it, you know, now in between half innings, you always have a security person come down and stand
yep.
at each sort of each walkway
mm-hmm.
right down to the fence. But
yeah.
they didn't used to do that. So
yeah,
I was ready.
Again, that's more of the presence is very, 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 very effective. Even if you know, like nobody knows how many security is there because we do have a very flexible staff. But you see them there, so it's like
some people think there's cameras all over the place.
Yeah,
people.
There are a number of cameras there that have taken a lot from security in terms of like you know the view and problem areas, especially areas that you can't really see like the upstairs,
yes.
the hallways where there's maybe nobody standing. There or things like
but
that.
Are they just tapes? Because I've never seen a place where somebody sits and monitors them.
Nobody knows where it is. We call it like the Wizard of Oz room, you know, where like the wizard lives, and it's usually Joe. Sometimes.
Joe McDermott?
Sometimes.
Because I mean, he's got that unusually positioned office, but he doesn't have TV monitors
mm-hmm.
in his office.
I've personally never seen it, but we've always heard of it.
Maybe it's all fiction.
Yeah, it's a possibility. I mean,
you know, it's a good thing. I wouldn't be surprised if they tape stuff just because they might get an incident on tape.
That's true.
Or it's always not a bad thing to put up fake cameras because
mm-hmm.
people think they're working.
Yeah.
Too, but
there's a lot of equipment there. You've probably seen old speakers that are up there,
yeah,
things like
yeah.
that you know, probably worked 30 years, 40 years ago, but, you know, we never know.
Right. There's so many weird areas and stuff. And after the game, you pretty much just go in, put your jacket back, sign
yeah,
out, and
sign out, then we go
and
home.
Leave.
Mm-hmm.
And they pay you like every 2 weeks or something?
We don't know. They have a schedule.
Yeah.
But usually at the end of every homestead.
Yeah, okay. And they give it to you at the time or they mail it to you?
I'll mail it. They
yeah.
do the same accounting. You know, if you want direct deposit, you get direct deposit. If you want to check, you check.
Is it more or less around $50 a game?
Something like that,
yeah.
effectively.
I mean, that's what it was a couple years ago, depending on how many years you've been.
Yes, exactly. It's all based on seniority.
Yeah. Well, geez, I don't know. There's some other question that drifted across my consciousness there, but I thought about running out of the field. But, oh, yeah, I mean, people do run out of the field
mm-hmm.
once in a while.
Yeah, you see that.
And
all the ones you mentioned at your lecture, I mean, I remember them all vividly.
Yeah.
The guy getting out the second, yeah, I remember that.
He doesn't call me back. I got his grandmother's number.
Yeah, I heard
it. I talked to her, and I wrote him a letter, but he, you know, I think his father probably told him, don't call.
Yeah.
There's no percentage in it for you, or whatever. But I think he maybe just did community service. I don't know. Have you ever heard?
I mean, we
really
I mean, you ask all the police officers, they usually tell you the same thing. It's like, you know, a fine and maybe a night in jail or anything
yeah.
like that. But nobody really knows what the truth is.
Right.
Because I've never spoken to a person who's after the fact that they got caught and ran
yeah,
out of the field.
I'm still hoping to do that.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I'll see you over there
sometime. Okay.
I'm going to be there tomorrow, but I'll be with my wife, so I may stay put.
Oh, no problem.
I'm in the front row of section 17.
Okay.
Right
definitely.
The,
well, enjoy.
The upper box. But I'll be back Sunday and maybe next week.
Okay.
Maybe when Nomo comes back, I'll see
oh.
if I can do two in a row.
Yeah, that's amazing. Everybody's like, now everybody's all pumped up right now.
I know. It took one day after the day before when everybody was ready to...
The Red Sox caps are flying off the shelves, I'm telling you, right now. And I work right next to a lids, and I know there won't be anybody left. But yeah, if you need any other questions, definitely feel free to give me a call. I'm more than happy to you know, answer anything.
Yeah.
Just give you insight and why we love working here so much.
Right.
Okay?
Okay, thanks a lot.
No problem. No. Take care. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
No, I did not.
Okay.
No, it was my first year in covering baseball, and I was not assigned to the World Series.
Because, do you know the name John Holway?
Yes.
As a writer or something?
Yeah.
He's written me, and he said his theory, and he just messed
MVP writer. See, when you look at film of the game as to whether Teske held the ball, mm-hmm. most people don't see him holding the ball. And the newspaper reports the very next day, mm-hmm. almost none of them mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, a day later, they all started talking about it. And I was thinking that Teske was in the clubhouse, because he apparently was in the clubhouse, saying, oh, if only I'd thrown the ball, you know, kind of taking the blame on himself, where maybe he didn't even deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And John always said, my theory is that Jack Lang of the AP put it in his story. And
I never worked for the AP.
Okay. Yeah,
he's got me confused.
He's confused with somebody else.
No, he got me confused with a man named Jack Hand, H-A-N-D.
Okay.
Who's now deceased, but
okay.
who did cover the World Series for the Associated Press.
Okay.
There were two AP writers, one was Joe Reichman, one was Jack Hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And no, Jack Hand, I mean, it's not the first time I've been confused.
Sure, sure.
But I'm trying to think of who. Have you ever talked to Bob Bragan?
Yeah, I did. I just talked to him over the weekend.
How was he, all right?
Yeah, he
had a stroke this summer.
Yeah, he told me he couldn't. I mean, we talked for about 5 or 6 minutes, and he said, you know, that
it was difficult to break.
Well, he was fine talking, but he said that was all that he should spend.
Yeah,
you know, but
yeah, he was limited to how long he could work.
Right.
Trying to think, you know, this.
I talked to Marty Marion, and I talked to Enos Slaughter, and mm-hmm. some of the players in the game, you know.
Well, Enos, he wouldn't have seen it anyway.
No, he didn't, but he was understanding. You know, he was.
There might have been some slight hesitation on Johnny's part. I mean, Johnny was the second baseman, right?
He was shortstop.
I mean, shortstop. Yeah,
the door was on second. But it wasn't like he didn't double clutch or anything. He threw the ball badly when the ball came in. It was about 8 or 9.
My understanding is that he hesitated because he didn't expect to have Slaughter going.
Oh, nobody would have. Yeah.
And that's why, you know, he's got some credit for Slaughter has gotten.
Yeah, but I think the credit goes to Slaughter more than that.
Oh, there's no question that Slaughter was the, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, even if he held it for a second, he still might not have been able to get Slaughter, because Slaughter had made up his mind.
Yeah, no, he was
playing Cardinals played.
But the throw was off the line anyhow, which that kind of stuff happens, you know.
No, I mean, you talked to Dorado, he's still alive.
Yeah, no, I've talked to quite a few people, and nobody faults Teske. I just noticed that in the...
Oh, yeah, in some of the stories he's faulted, I know that. And
none of the players that were right there.
No, I don't mean that, but I mean in some stories that I've read,
yes.
And it's something that's a spot that's followed him his entire life.
It has.
Because somebody wrote it, and somebody had their feeling that he held the ball for a second, and,
right.
And as a result, what you just said about Slaughter deserves more credit than he deserves to be blamed.
Right, yep.
It was to Slaughter's credit, yeah. And as I say, I don't think Slaughter was watching Teske because Slaughter had his back to the play, and he was just determined he was going to go home.
Right, yeah.
It was the end of the game, and even if he got thrown out of the plate, he wouldn't have lost the ballgame.
Yeah.
It would have still been tied, right?
Well, that was the go-ahead run.
Yeah, but I mean, if he hadn't scored, the score would have still been tied.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, the gamble he took was to score the winning run. It wasn't to score the tying run.
Absolutely, yep.
They already were tied.
Yep.
You know, I think, in retrospect, from what everything I've read, and I started covering that year, I just didn't cover the World Series because there wasn't a New York team involved. But from what I understand, all the years that I covered baseball, is that Teske may have momentarily held the ball until he decided where he was going to throw. But by then, Slaughter was well around third and headed home.
Yep.
So Slaughter deserves credit more than Teske deserves the blame.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, I've been across. Yeah, it's pretty,
not my fault. I mean,
guys
are idiots.
People said that your instructions were very explicit.
Right.
The pitchers are to be considered.
That's right. Oh, it should be, sure. In fact, that was something that I added after I took over the job. It wasn't in the original instructions handed out in the 30s. It was only, that was one of the things that I included, because I also said both starters and relievers, you know, because they just said all players. And a lot of guys, when we created the Cy Young Awards, started thinking, well, pitcher shouldn't be considered. So the argument was by some, third baseman or shortstop can't be considered for Cy Young Award. Well, that wasn't the idea of the Cy Young Award. It was just it was four tricks I did to pick out an outstanding pitcher.
Right.
In fact, he got very annoyed when we decided to pick one in both leagues.
Yeah.
He just wanted one for all of baseball.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was glorifying Cy Young as well. So.
Sure.
But then when we went to both leagues, I know he got up at one of our meetings and he was very much opposed to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot. Okay.
This month, I'm going to be away for a couple weeks. My name... Swans outside Fenway Park. A few weeks ago, I'm doing some research on people that work in and around the park, and you said maybe give you a call sometime.
Yeah.
Okay. How old are you now?
18.
18, yeah. And you, when did you first start working at Fenway?
About 3 years ago.
You work for Aramark.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you first get the job?
I used to sell Boston baseball.
Oh, you worked for Mike Rutstein then?
Yep.
Great, because I talked to a couple guys there, Ryan Goldney, you must know him, I guess. How did you start working, how did you start doing Boston baseball then?
A friend.
A friend introduced you?
Yes.
And you both were selling together for a while or something?
He was there very rarely. He said he was quitting, so.
Yeah.
I basically took over his job. But then I wasn't making enough money.
13 cents an issue or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I knew a police officer, and he knew the person who hired at Fenway.
At Aramark.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you went in and applied for the job, and you got it?
Right.
Yeah. And what did they put you on first?
As a cashier.
Oh, yeah. At one of the stands or whatever you call it?
Yeah.
Which one were you working at?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I forgot which number.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Out in the bleachers.
Oh, out in the bleachers. Okay, so you were ringing up the stuff that people were selling. And then you're selling sodas now mostly?
Yes.
How long did you do the cashier stuff?
Probably a few weeks.
Oh, not too long.
No, and then they stuck me on sodas, and I've been there ever since.
Do you want to move to something else?
I'd like to get a feeling of being a cashier again, but...
Yeah. I mean, the sodas must be one of the heaviest things to carry, isn't it?
Oh. You got hundreds and hundreds of people asking for a soda at night. So you have to be producing all these sodas pretty quickly.
Yeah. Jimmy, do you know how much it weighs when you pick up the whole thing?
In terms of how much money they make?
No. Maybe I gotta understand. Do you work behind the counter or do you work in the stands?
I work behind the counter.
Oh, okay. See, I thought you were carrying one of those big things of stuff. So you sell sodas and hot dogs and stuff?
Well, I sell soda mostly.
Okay. Do you work in the bleachers these days or different places?
I work behind home plate up in Grandstand.
Oh, okay. That's where I usually go. But I don't remember seeing you there, I guess. But. Oh, okay. I'll look more carefully next time I'm there. I'm not going to be there for a couple of weeks, except during the All-Star game, I'll be there.
I was going to call you, in fact.
Yeah?
I was like, I haven't heard from you.
Yeah, it took me a while because they have a lot of home games.
Right.
And then I...
So I didn't know what time was a good time.
Right. Now, you told me you just graduated high school?
Yes.
And you're going to start Bunker Hill this fall?
Yes.
And you tell me your plan again was to do that and then transfer over to Emerson or something? Tell me what you hope to do there, then.
I want to study film.
Yeah.
Theater. So one day I can go out and make movies.
Like Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
Yeah, or somebody.
I'll be bigger.
Oh, okay. And so with between the college, you could be around the area here for a few more years.
Right.
And you think maybe you'll keep working at Fenway then?
There's a good chance. But
yeah.
If I get offered as a job as a security guard, then I'll take that because it will be easier for me with my schoolwork.
Right. I mean, if you're lucky, you could get an internship of some kind working with a film crew that comes to town or something. That'd be the thing.
That would be better. Then I'd quit my job, too.
Right, yeah. One of the casting agencies or something like that. But you told me you knew some kid that got suspended for a few games just because he ate a soft serve ice cream or something?
Yes.
What was that all about?
Oh, wait. Can you hold on a second?
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay, actually, first of all, let me ask you, just to make sure I get it right, how do you spell your last name?
O-G.
Yep.
U-N.
Mm-hmm.
G-B.
Yep.
A-D.
E-R-O.
E-R, yes.
I wrote it down right the first time, then. That's an unusual name. Do you know what its origin is?
Nigerian.
Oh, okay. It sounds like it could be. I was over in Nigeria once upon a time for about a week, I guess, and I traveled to Africa several times. You ever live there?
No. Two of my brothers have.
Yeah. That's cool. Get that. Now, just one other thing. You said, how many Cokes do you pour during the course of an evening, just as a guess? Or do you know?
Depends on how many, the kind of day it is.
Well, sure.
The past few days have been pouring between souvenir sodas. I've been probably, like, total, it's probably about 500.
Yeah. And there's...
My record?
Yeah.
I broke it twice this year. So my record right now is 489 souvenir cups.
Wow.
Which is not the... I don't think anybody's ever gotten 489 by themselves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those cost, what, $350?
Yeah.
And then they're the most expensive choice. Then you get regular soda and you get kid's soda. Yeah. Does anybody much buy the kid's soda?
How much? Do people buy the kid's soda?
Yeah.
Rarely. It's very uncommon for someone to buy a kid's soda because it's really expensive.
That's what I always buy, though, because I want to save 50 cents, so I get the $2.50 drink. And nobody ever asked me, hey, you're not a kid or something. They don't really care, I guess. That must be a lot of ounces of Coke that you do there. How many times do they have to change it? They have, like, a tank it comes out of? Or?
Yeah, about once a day.
Oh, really? You get that many out of one tank?
Oh, yeah. We have about two for each of them. So.
Right. So it's mostly syrup, and then it mixes with water on the way out, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's an awful lot of souvenir cups. Now, if somebody wanted to go up to you and ask for, hey, can I have a cup so I can go get some water out of the water fountain, you always say no, right?
I'm supposed to.
You're supposed to say no.
I give them this health cup.
Once in a while, you give them a paper cup?
No, plastic.
The plastic.
The paper cups, they count.
Well, that's what I was getting at, actually, was to ask you if they control the... In any way, by the number of, if they have a control by the number of cups that they have, then.
Yeah.
So that you're assigned a certain number of cups. If you drop a cup and something happens, you got to save it because you need to turn that back in as proof you didn't sell it.
Right.
So, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But
cashier gets in trouble.
Right.
And then the manager, the whole ugly thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, they got to have controls. Because otherwise it'd be, it would get out of control and stuff. Now, you told me the story about this kid that got suspended. I've talked to another kid that got suspended once before. The guy, well, a few times. Rob Barry, you might even know him. He's the guy that throws the peanuts and stuff, and they don't like him throwing stuff around up in the stands. But what happened with this kid?
Oh, he was off with a warning.
Yeah, but what he did is he just took some ice cream for himself.
Yeah.
Just, in other words, he took a little cone and ran the ice cream a little bit and just...
We have to count the cones, too.
Right, oh, okay, so we put it in one of the... You got these little plastic cups that you use for yourself or something.
Right.
Yeah. And that wasn't something he was supposed to do, because that's kind of like stealing from the company, I guess.
Right.
So when they look at it, did they give you a chance to have, if you wanted to have, like, one drink a night, is that totally up to you, or you just do it and then pay for it, in effect?
Oh, well, we get the drinks, like, you just drink however much you need.
Yeah.
But that's basic. That's really it. You can't really have anything else.
So you could have as much as you wanted from Coke or Sprite or something.
Right.
But if you wanted to have ice cream or hot dog, that's off limits.
Right.
So to speak, yeah. Well, you got to give people something to drink, so that's good. You know, also, you said... I wanted to find out a little bit more about the hard copy piece. Hard copy ran a piece, was it like last winter?
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah, I saw it just by circumstance on TV. And then when you guys all came back this year, because they knew that they'd had a little bit of scrutiny, they said something to you about it?
Yeah, well, one kid got fired who put the chip in his mouth. I mean, he had the chip inside his mouth, and his fingers were inside his mouth, and then he went, without washing his hands, he served the customer.
It was like, what kind of a chip was it?
Nacho.
Like a nacho chip, yeah. And they caught that on the video.
Right.
So they were able to identify him, so they had to let him go.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they got to do that. What else did they show on the show? I can't really remember it now.
They had that. Without gloves on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just little minor things, but they all add up.
Oh, it looks bad, yeah.
It looks bad, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you focus on the little things, and plus it's not all stand set.
It's not all what?
It's not all the stands in the ballpark that have people like that. Like
oh, sure.
Stand, the stand that I work at is one of the most cleanest stands in the,
yep.
in the ballpark. I mean, just because of the people there.
Well, yeah, it's right up front. Home plate.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, like the chef.
Yes.
He's really strict about about things being sanitary.
Yep.
And how to treat the food and so.
Well, you know, the average customer would be happier to learn that they saw there was a problem and they moved to correct it, as opposed to they just ignored it or something. I mean, that wouldn't be very good.
Right.
So did they give you a sort of a pep talk at the beginning of the year too about, you know, we got to be careful about everything and so forth?
Mm-hmm. I said, make sure you wear your gloves and you just gotta basically follow all the sanitary rules.
Yeah. Now the chef that you mentioned works at the stand or works back in the commissary?
At the stand.
Oh, so there's a person right there that you call a chef?
Yes.
Who's standing in the back working with the hot dogs and the french fries or something?
No, he does the sausages, the chicken, stir fry.
Hamburgers?
Yeah, the hamburgers, the steak.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. The other employees, they do the hot dogs.
And the french fries.
And the french fries, yeah.
Are they also chefs, or they have another title?
No, we have another title.
Yeah, what's that?
Just a stand worker.
Stand worker, yeah. So there's one key guy, and he does the actual grilled stuff.
Right. The ones that, like, you really need to pay attention to.
Yeah.
And make sure you cook really thoroughly.
Sure. Well, I'll probably try to meet him sometime when it's not too busy there. And try to maybe see if he's willing to chat at some point. So that's definitely a lot of cokes and stuff that you go through. What do you see during the course of the game? It's pretty busy most of the time, I guess. You don't have a lot of time to just sort of look out at people.
I might see about a half an inning. I feel like it's the last half of an inning when nobody's trying to buy anything.
Right. When the Red Sox are up before the minute the Red Sox finish batting each inning, probably the crowd picks up a little bit.
Yeah.
Because
well,
I do.
In the beginning of the game, about a half hour before the game.
Yeah.
Till about the third inning, where it slows down, but there's still people there. After the third inning, you're busy until about the sixth inning.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still people coming in. So you're really busy up until the seventh inning. But you have to clean up after that. So by the time you clean up, it's about the ninth inning.
Can you hold on for me for just a minute, please? Hi. That was my wife calling. So you're pretty busy the whole time, and unlike the beer stand, you guys got to stay open till when do you actually stop? The minute the game is over?
Yeah.
Like
when the game ends, we just lock everything up.
If there's two outs in the bottom of the ninth, you're still open.
Yeah.
And then somebody how do you know the game's over? Somebody just tells you.
Well,
you can watch the TV.
Most of the time, there's nobody in there, so.
Right.
So, but and the people that are already finished.
Yeah.
The people that do pizza, they're finished.
Oh, sure.
Who do hot dogs, they don't have to cook anymore, so they're usually, they can sit there and watch the game. And the manager checks. And
yeah.
As you can tell when the game's over, when you go, ah!
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or when the people start leaving, you know.
Right.
Sometimes we don't even get a chance to watch the game. So it's like the game's been over for 10 minutes, and we're looking, and we're like, oh, oops.
So you
have a chance to watch it, or...
Were you a Red Sox fan before you got the job for
yeah.
Boston baseball?
Oh, yeah, I loved it.
How'd you get interested in watching the Red Sox?
I got interested in sports. I used to like, when I was like younger, I used to love baseball.
Yep.
But I wasn't like crazy about baseball. And then I just got to like it. But 3 years ago was when I started actually really liking it. And then I'm getting a job at working for
right.
baseball.
But does it drive you crazy to be sitting right, you know, they're right behind your back, and you hear all these shouts go up? And can you watch some of the game on the TV monitors there?
Well, where I am, there's no TV monitor.
You can't see from your angle?
I can't see from my angle.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it used to be bothering me, like, ooh, what's going on, what's going on? But
right.
After a while, it just grows off of you. I mean, I haven't followed baseball for a while because I've been so, it's just, once you're working with the baseball so much, it just becomes a regular job. And
right.
It's not like you don't have really the time to follow it.
Do you watch a little bit of batting practice before the game?
Yeah, you watch a little bit of batting practice. That's about as much as the game as you can get.
Now, when the Red Sox go on the road, like they're in Tampa Bay tonight, do you watch the games on TV at all?
No, that's either the time I'm just relaxing. I don't really pay. Baseball is just another thing now.
Yeah, cause, I mean, I talked to one guy that was a beer vendor, and he said, I never get to see the game because I'm working too hard. And then he goes home and watches the reruns when Nesson rebroadcasts the game about midnight. He stays up and watches the whole game, even though it's already over.
Oh.
So, I mean,
I didn't know they rebroadcast.
Yeah, on Nesson, they usually do about 11:30 or 12. They'll play the whole game. But, I mean, I would never do that myself, but you got to be a real fan.
I'm so tired. after your work, you're so tired, you just want to sleep. I want to stay up and watch this, I want to stay up and watch that.
Did you make any good friends over there?
Yeah, I made quite a few friends.
Some good people and stuff?
Yeah.
And then you know Jim from, I guess you met him at some point? Or you just got friendly because he sells the caps outside the door there?
Well, I met Jim when I used to sell Boston baseball.
Right, yeah.
And that's when I became friends with Jim.
Because you were working outside.
Right. And we just remained friends for as many years.
Yeah. Well, he's a nice guy. I knew him about 20 years ago myself, actually, and then I was surprised to see him in there one time.
Wow, 20 years?
Yeah. Well, we're old guys, Jim and me, so, you know.
Wow.
I knew him before you were born, right?
Yeah, it's before I was even born, you know.
Yeah.
How did you meet him?
Well, he used to be a disc jockey on WBCN.
What?
Did you know that?
No.
Back in I don't know whether it was the late 60s or the early 70s, sometime in the 70s. No, I don't know about 60s, but definitely sometime in the 1970s, he was a DJ, on-air disc jockey at WBCN. And
wow.
I run a record company, and he used to play some of our records on the air and stuff. And then he, lost that job. He's had a couple other jobs and so forth. But he's a radio guy.
Yeah, he said he wanted to make a radio thing on the internet.
Right, yeah.
But I didn't know that he was like a disc jockey.
But he has a history of it too, yeah.
See, I didn't know how, I was like, oh, he knew stuff about, like, the radio, and I just thought he just wanted to get into that just to make some money. Like, he was just starting to get into it.
I don't think he knows anything about film, as far as I know, but that's another story. You ever talk to any of the TV guys that work over there?
The cameraman?
Yeah.
They're more just film. I mean, I know all about filming. I have filmed so many things. Like cable vision.
Uh-huh. Have you worked as an intern with them then or something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I quit that when I started working. I do that in the winter time, and did that during the winter, and just when I started working again,
yeah.
I haven't had the time to go back there.
Geez, you might be able to get some kind of a job. I don't know if they pay you, though, but you might be able to get some kind of a job working with the TV station. Or
right.
Maybe that's not interesting, though. Maybe that you don't want to do that kind of film stuff, so.
See, I like acting also.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I'd rather go be on stage.
Yeah. Right.
It's not just a publicity, it's like just I love acting.
Good.
Publicity thing. The acting, I love the acting. It's so
yeah.
Fun. Playing a character that, it can be fun, it can be boring.
I
did one commercial and it was really fun, and that's when I was like, ooh, I'm gonna do this for life.
What was the product?
Oh, it was a racism commercial.
Racism?
Yeah, it was about, like, how the white and black. Get along.
It's an anti-racism thing. Who was it for? Like Massachusetts government or?
Yeah, it was a one of those I wish I had the thing on my tip of my tongue. Public service announcement.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool.
You did that. And in fact, I'd be looking for a job right now, but for acting, but I'm too busy working with the Red Sox that I haven't had the time.
What do you do the rest of the time? Because that's only 81 home games.
Well, yeah, but just if, like, I get a job,
yeah,
then I'd have to miss, like, some work,
right,
for the Red Sox. And if this job, and acting's not a permanent thing.
No.
So if I'd rather, I mean, it's kind of, you want to keep your permanent job.
Yeah.
More than you want to keep your, the other job, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my problem. But I'm going to do it. I'll get back in. And then when I start school.
Right, sure. Well, hopefully the Red Sox will get in the World Series and you'll have to work till the end of October.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Because one thing, we need to win the World Series.
One of these days.
And two, I need more money.
Right. Well, listen, thanks a lot for taking the time out here. I don't know, what's the best thing that ever happened to you over there? The most interesting thing or your favorite memory?
Favorite memory. You know?
Yeah, maybe nothing stands out.
Nothing that really stands out.
That's okay.
One thing that will always stand out. The first time I was watching batting practice, there was a ball that was hit into the stands,
mm-hmm,
and it literally came about an inch away from my head.
Wow. Yeah.
I was just like, I don't think I ever want to do this again.
I think I'll go back underneath. And
and then the ball bounced back on the field. And then I was like, Jim Corsi picked up the ball. And I was like, can you please pass the ball to me? And it almost hit me in the head. And Jim Corsi threw it back, like, to his teammates. And I was like, you couldn't even give me one baseball.
Right, yeah.
It almost hit me in the head.
Yeah.
But
I almost got killed at beer vendor there, and she said she gets about $60 a night.
For a beer vendor?
Yeah.
Wow.
I can't remember what she said she got, but you're all in the union, right?
Right.
So you all get a certain amount of money, but yeah, I mean, it's, you can lose it fast.
Wow, 30. Well, say that I don't need to buy any tickets off
you. Right. Well, what do you call yourself, or do you have a job title?
Child care provider.
Child care provider, good. Does that have anything to do with other work that you do? I don't know what else you do. I mean, you do this 81 games a year, I guess.
Not every game.
Well, okay.
And what do I do besides that?
Yeah, I was just wondering.
I'm a volunteer at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Oh, great. I just did 40 miles this morning because I'm in training for the Pan Mass Challenge.
Oh, yes.
This coming weekend. I've ridden in that for 6 years now.
Oh, great.
To help raise some money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. Tell me how you first got the job at Fenway.
Well, after working at the Norwood Hospital in Norwood, Mass.,
yep.
I retired after approximately 32 years.
Yes.
Being working at the hospital on the 11 to 7 shift.
What, as what?
As an RN.
As an RN, okay, yeah.
And I just decided that after I retired, I would like to do something a little different.
Sure.
And I sent in an application to the Red Sox staff. And this job came up. They needed somebody at the time and checked my references and so forth and asked me if I would be interested.
Had you known about this kind of position, or were you possibly thinking about being an RN over with the EMTs there? And
no, I had just thought that I would like to do something different. And being the mother of 6 children and grandmother of 11,
oh, boy.
I felt that I was qualified for this position.
Yeah. But you knew that this was the area. I mean, you didn't want to sell hot dogs or something like that.
No,
but.
And I could have worked as an RN with Flex and so forth.
Yeah.
But I just decided I wanted something a little diversified, a little different.
Sure.
Than I was doing before.
Why did you think of the Red Sox?
Because my whole family became involved with the Red Sox years ago. Coming from New Hampshire, we always listened to the Red Sox on radio. My grandparents and my father and my brothers were great sports players playing baseball. One of my brothers played for the American Legion, and he went to the World Series.
Oh, great.
Like in 1947, I think.
Yeah.
And I was quite involved with the Red Sox, and they were always like...
You mean involved as a fan?
As a fan.
Yes.
And then when I graduated from nursing school, I lived on Brookline Ave and worked at the Beth Israel Hospital, and many times... my colleagues and I would go to the Red Sox games, sit in the bleachers, and watch the Red Sox play.
Right.
I've always been a great Red Sox fan.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in...
Your application, too.
Well, yeah, I think I'll pass right now because I'm 54, but maybe later on I'll take the route that you've taken and mm-hmm. try to figure out something there. So tell me, what time do you usually show up? The normal game would be 7 o'clock for an evening game, I guess.
Yes, well, tonight it's at 8:05.
Right.
We're asked to show up 15 minutes prior to game time.
That's all, really, because
yes.
So many other people show up 2 or 3 hours earlier.
But that's all we're required to deem it. But, of course, coming from Norwood, which is approximately 16 miles to Fenway, I leave early because I never know about the traffic.
Sure.
And I get there a little early and into the child care room.
Right. Now, that is...
The family room. They call it the family room.
They call it the family room. And then you go in through the main clubhouse door. That's what Bob was telling me. You that door that... Well, you tell me how you get in.
Well, actually, you're supposed to go through the gate, you know, right on Yawkey Way. There's a gate there.
The service gate area?
No, we're you know, people go with tickets.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's a service gate, but, and you show your badge. There's
okay.
a badge that you wear with your photo.
Yes.
And your name on it.
Right.
And you just show your badge, but that's really the way you're supposed to go through.
But then to get to the room, you go through that clubhouse door?
Yes, and there's Joe. Joe is there.
Yeah.
And you just knock at the door. And Joe will open the door and see who it is, and you just come in.
And then you turn right and go up some stairs or something?
No, you just turn right and go straight through.
Straight. The umpires are upstairs, maybe.
Yes.
I've been in the clubhouse, but I went in through the dugout
mm-hmm.
the couple times I've been there, so I'm not so familiar with the setup yet.
Yeah, I just, you know, where Joe is, and you knock on the door, and then you walk right down,
right.
and you take a right. There's a door right there.
How big a room is it?
It's not very big. There's the first room that you enter is where the wives, it's called the wives' room.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a couch and some chairs and a refrigerator. And there's a closet where we hold the children's toys that the Red Sox provide, toys and puzzles and you know, different games and so forth there. And then we enter into our room, which has a television for the videos. And it has some chairs and tables, and there's a bathroom off of that.
Right.
The room, I wouldn't say it's too, I don't know the direct dimensions.
Well, I should have phrased the question more mm-hmm. in another way. How many kids do you tend to have in there from high to low, I guess?
The age is from 1 to 10.
Mm-hmm. If they're over 10, they usually just go up and watch the game?
Yes, or they can sit with their mother
right.
in their other room. So, like, we don't have anybody under one that
right.
comes into the room.
Yeah.
And
how many kids will you have at any given time?
It varies.
Probably occasionally. There's nobody.
Last night we had eight children.
Mm-hmm.
And the babysitting service is available to the children of the members of the Red Sox uniform staff.
As well as the players?
They're the players. It's just...
The players' uniform,
yes.
as opposed
no
to...
No other club personnel, like relatives or friends, are entitled to utilize the service.
Right, so even Dan Duquette theoretically wouldn't use the service because he's the general manager instead of a...
I don't know if he could use it. I mean, it's just really for the members of the Red Sox uniform staff.
Yeah, well, that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
Probably. So, sometimes you have nobody in there at all?
There has never been that occasion.
Oh, okay.
There's always been somebody. But the babysitting service is only available to those eligible children whose mother is in attendance at the game.
I see, okay.
And it's provided only during home games.
Well, what about somebody like Mark Portugal, then, that's going through a divorce and he has two kids in Rhode Island?
Well, he
just makes other arrangements or something?
Yeah, I think that's what he'd have to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you want to have somebody that you can, a parent that you can call on without bringing them out of the bullpen or something like that. Yeah,
yes.
Right.
And any child that is left under the care of the babysitters must be signed in and out of the room by their mothers.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and the mothers must notify the babysitters where they are seated during the ball game prior to leaving the children with the babysitters.
It may not be too soon, but sometime we'll have a female ball player, and then they'll probably adapt the policy somewhat.
Right, right.
I know there's one woman out someplace in the Midwest that's doing very well right now. But she's a little older, and I don't think she's going to make it into the majors, but she's making some inroads there. Bob, I guess, brings down some pizzas once in a while or something.
The third inning, he brings in pizza, he brings in hot dogs, he brings in chicken wings, fingers, I guess they're called.
Yeah. What's the most number of kids you ever had in there that you recall?
The opening day of this season, there were 19 children.
19?
Mm-hmm.
And they really can fit in there?
Yes.
Is there enough seating for them, or are they kind of...
Yes, there is. There's several tables and chairs, and there's quite a bit. The children are little, so they only need little tiny chairs.
Sure, yeah. I have a son that's 8, so I know the way it goes. And then you basically sort of look after them. How many staffers do you have? There's yourself and one or two others?
There's a total of 6 of us.
Mm-hmm.
But at each game, there's usually about 4.
Yes. Okay, so it'd be a good ratio if it was there are 4 providers and 8 kids, say.
Yes.
And
yes.
Tell me some of the activities that you offer then to entertain them or...
We draw with them. We make puzzles with them. We play different games, checkers,
mm-hmm.
with the little older ones, checkers, and different games that they have. There's, several games, cards. We read to them. They watch videos.
Yeah, I figure videos probably it would be as often the case.
And
like movies like The Lion King and so forth?
Yeah, and Babe. There's a movie called Babe.
Oh, yeah, I know that one, sure.
But we just entertain them with different activities. Some of the other providers are teachers, and they're right up on their skills with activities.